May it please the court. My name is Arthur Galwitzer. I have been appointed to represent Mr. Jimmy Mallett in this appeal. We would like the court to focus on two errors in this case. First, we ask the court to reverse this conviction because the government charged Mr. Mallett with one offense but assured his conviction with a flood of evidence from an uncharged offense. And second, we ask that this court remand, or I should say alternatively, remand this case to the district court for resentencing because the district court compounded the error by relying on a vastly different drug quantity from the uncharged first alleged offense in sentencing Mr. Mallett in the second case. This case is about the government's decision to charge Mr. Mallett with one offense and then use uncharged, unrelated conduct to ensure a conviction and a severe sentence. There was an arrest in April of 2001 in which, by the city of Gary, a case that was dismissed by the state of Indiana in response to Mr. Mallett's motion to suppress.
And on that April sale, if it was error to admit that evidence, didn't Mallett admit that crack was being sold from his house to 20 to 25 people a day during that time period, and that he bought powder cocaine and cooked it in the crack to better serve his customers?
Yes, Mr. Mallett made post-arrest statements in both the April and the December arrest.
So what was the harm in admitting the evidence? That's my question.
Absolutely, Your Honor. This was not a harmless error for one main reason. This court has articulated the harmless error standard in a number of ways, one of which is if the government's case is significantly less persuasive without the improperly admitted evidence, then the error is not harmless. And while we cannot know what the jury was thinking back in deliberations, we can look at the government's actions as evidence of how important this part of their case was. The government started and ended its trial with the April evidence. The government led off the trial, where trial lawyers often use the most persuasive evidence, with three consecutive witnesses and at least seven exhibits telling every detail of the story of the April arrest.
And then his confession was admitted as well. What Mallett admitted came in to trial, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. The post-arrest statement in April, which might have been the fruits of a poisonous search, as well as his post-arrest statement in December. And then the government finished in closing argument, the government's very last words to the jury. The government referred to the facts of the April arrest at least five times, not just citations to it, but five recitations to specific facts in the April case. And this court, we should look at why, if the government wanted to use all this April evidence, both at trial and sentencing, why didn't the government just indict Mr. Mallett for all these offenses together? And we don't know, I can't speak for the government, but one answer might be that if the April case is part of the charge, then direct evidence from the April arrest likely would not have come in if the search was bad. So the government used Rule 404B to come around through the back door with evidence that the state of Indiana, at least, thought was insufficient to pursue charges in the April case. So, as we know, the government can't use evidence of other acts to prove propensity. And this court has set forth, under Rule 404B, there's an exception when the government is trying to prove something else like intent. And there are four factors. And the last factor is the key here, which is the evidence is not permissible when the danger of unfair prejudice substantially outweighs the probative value. And the district court is supposed to act as a gatekeeper, is supposed to be a dam holding back the flood of improper evidence. The government should not, under Rule 404B, be allowed to use cumulative evidence, unnecessary details, specifically references to guns. There were, of the three witnesses that the government put on to describe the April case, Two of them were law enforcement agents who talked about finding guns and finding other men at the scene with guns, all things that have nothing to do with any of the elements of the offense actually charged in this indictment. And as this court said in USA versus Best, a case where a conviction was affirmed, the court noted that that was really pushing the envelope, but in that case, the court affirmed the conviction because it was merely a passing reference. Here, the photos of the guns are in evidence, and we have multiple witnesses talking about them. I'd also like to talk about the sentence, Your Honors. The error here led to a conviction, and then the district court compounded the error by imposing a sentence of 210 months imprisonment. The district court did that by focusing on not the 5 grams of cocaine base found in and around the time of the federal arrest, but instead by focusing on 85 grams of cocaine base seized in connection with the potentially improper search in the April state arrest. That raised Mr. Mallett's guideline sentencing range from 70 to 87 all the way up to 168 to 210 months. That's 10 years. Now, of course, the court, in calculating a guidelines range, can consider all relevant conduct. And relevant conduct in the case of drug cases includes events that are part of either the same course of conduct or a common scheme or plan.
And why aren't the crack cocaine sales from the same house enough to show the April and December sales were part of the same course of conduct?
If I can take those one at a time, Your Honor, because I think there has been some juxtaposition in this case of course of conduct and common scheme and plan. To go to your question, when there's a common plan, this court has held that when there is at least one common factor, the district court may find a common plan. And there was a common factor here, the house, the location. But there's nothing else. There's no evidence of common suppliers. In fact, there was evidence to the contrary. There's no evidence of common accomplices, common customers. And then you add the fact that you have a vastly different quantity of drugs. If we look at the other way to find relevant conduct, which is course of conduct, there can be no argument that there's a single course of conduct here because, one, we have an 8-month gap. That alone is not dispositive. But the government itself presented evidence that during that 8-month period, Mr. Mallett was not engaged in any alleged narcotic sales. And the government itself presented evidence that the alleged suppliers were different. So we're left with common plan. And the only common factor is the house. And this court has held that significant similarity, regularity, or temporal proximity is required. With that, Your Honors, my light is on. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Goldwitz. Ms. Johnson?
Thank you. Good morning. The government submits that the district court did not abuse its discretion by allowing the omission of the 404B evidence just for the limited purpose of proving intent in this case. The government was very cautious in only offering very limited evidence of the April 2001 uncharged conduct. The three witnesses that testified each testified to different parts of that event. Detective Pointer testified regarding using the prostitute to make this controlled purchase of drugs directly from the defendant, Jimmy Mallett. Officer Trevino talked about doing a search of that location. And then there was a chemist who testified and that she confirmed that the substance was, in fact, crack cocaine. This was very limited testimony. In fact, the government counted the pages of the testimony. It would only cover 45 pages of this 138-page trial. There was no evidence of the April 2001 events on the second day of trial, though there were some comments and references to the April 2001 statements during the closing argument. The government...
And the relevant intent was intent to distribute?
The relevant intent was the relevant intent to distribute the drugs at that location, as well as maintaining this location for the operation of crack sale.
Why was there doubt about that based on the December events?
Well, in the nature of the one offense maintaining a location for the distribution of drugs or drug trafficking lends itself to some concern about whether or not this person knew what was taking place at that location. Some of the purchases of drugs were not directly from Mr. Malik. So for that purpose, his specific intent to show that he had knowledge that this house was being used for that limited purpose, showing that he specifically intended to sell these drugs, the government submits that that was relevant and used only for that purpose.
Well, isn't it hard to say that the April conduct was part of a single episode, spree, or ongoing series of offenses when Malik had stopped selling drugs for 7 or 8 months? Are actions with that larger break truly ongoing?
And you're referring to the sentencing issue.
Right.
The government submits that that short break in time still shows that this defendant was in the same course of conduct.
That's 7 or 8 months?
Yes, and I believe it's even a little bit less than that.
What was he doing during that time? Do we know?
We're not certain.
Was he out of the state or something?
There's no evidence that he was not at a different location. I believe there was some testimony that the agents believed that the defendant was going to cooperate with the agents, so they were probably waiting to see if that was going to come to fruition. When it did not, they started their investigation again of Mr. Mallett in that location, and yet revealed that he was, in fact, still distributing drugs at that location. And that's what led to the December events.
Well, the suppliers in April and December were different. Was there any other evidence other than the home and the drug type to tie the conduct together, such as common buyers?
There were not necessarily known common buyers. The government would submit that based on the nature of this type of location, the people were going in and out very quickly. I believe Agent Becker testified to the nature of this type of drug distribution. Commonly, you have people go to a location, leave very quickly, so they may not have been able to make that type of determination of whether or not it was the same type of buyers. But even Mr. Mallett's statements were very similar. When he described the events that occurred in April 2001, it was almost identical to the events that occurred in December 2001. He was making the crack. He was cooking the crack. The officers corroborated that by finding the paraphernalia, the baggies, the scales, and the type of materials that are used to, in fact, transform the powder cocaine into crack cocaine.
Now, the district court only found that April sales were part of the same course of conduct. She didn't find they were part of a common scheme or plan. Is that right?
That is correct. And it's not clear from the record why that she limited her analysis to that part. But it's clear that it was the same course of conduct, and the government submits that that was an accurate finding by the court. The government also submits regarding the 404B evidence that if there was any error, that that was harmless error based on the overwhelming evidence that the defendant, Jimmy Malik, himself personally was involved in the distribution of crack cocaine in December 2001, that he admitted this type of conduct post-arrest in December 2001. So if there was any error at all, it was harmless error based on the overwhelming evidence, especially with the defendant's own statement.
Should there be any limits on how long a break might be? Here we had 7 or 8, and you said that wasn't a problem. What if it was a year or 18 months? Should there be any limit on when something is ongoing?
The government would be reluctant to say that there should be a bright line rule as to what period of time would mean that there is not a link to the previous conduct. I know there's numerous cases, and some were cited by the government in its brief, regarding even time periods longer than 7 or 8 months. The government would submit that in this drug trafficking type of activity, that's a very short time period.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Johnson.
The government will rely on its brief, and we're asking that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Johnson. Ms. Goldwitzer, Mr. Goldwitzer, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. 2 points in response. First, on the sentencing issue, the district court judge did focus on course of conduct, and we submit there just can't be a single course of conduct here when the government itself put in the evidence that the defendant wasn't engaged in drug sales during that time, and the government itself put in the evidence that there was no common supplier. That this is not a course of conduct, and it's erroneous. And in this court, in U.S. versus Avila, reversed a decision from the same district court finding relevant finding outside circumstances as relevant conduct when they just weren't. Second, on the Rule 404B issue, the government said it put in limited evidence for a limited purpose, but it told the entire story to the jury through these witnesses of the April arrest. And there has to be a line somewhere. I don't ask this court to draw a bright line, but in this case, if we look at what would have happened if the government had actually indicted the April conduct, what more proof would it have put in? We submit that what the government did was put in everything that it would have put into evidence if it had charged the April conduct, and that seems far more than is necessary, certainly under the fourth prong of the Rule 404B test. That seems unfairly prejudicial, and it seems like a backdoor attempt to avoid a Fourth Amendment problem with the state search. So for these reasons, we respectfully request that the court reverse this conviction and remand to the district court for a new trial with instructions limiting the 404B evidence, or in the alternative, remand this case for resentencing with instructions to the district court not to include the 85 grams of cocaine base seized in April 2001 as part of relevant conduct. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Goldwitzer, and thank you for accepting the appointment and for your vigorous efforts.